Prologue. The North Atlantic, April 14, 2031. 17 years before Omni 2 wakes beneath the moon. The bridge of the cargo ship Hesperion held one chair, padded, heated, adjusted over the course of three decades to the precise shape of one man's spine. Marcus Thive sat in it because the insurance consortium required him to. The ship did not. The ship had not required a human master for 9 years and would not require one for the next 40, but the regulatory framework governing transoceanic bulk cargo had been written by people who could not yet imagine their own obsolescence. The framework required a captain. The captain required a chair. The chair required, on average, one human body seated inside it for the duration of every voyage between Rotterdam and Baltimore. Marcus held a paper cup of coffee. He had been holding it for 2 hours. The coffee had not been warm for 90 minutes, but he had not noticed, because there was nothing to notice on the bridge of an autonomous carrier, except the absence of things to notice. Beyond the bridge windows, the North Atlantic moved with its own slow, ancient patience. The Hesperion, 290 meters of steel, laden with grain bound for Maryland, corrected her heading by 3 degrees and adjusted her trim with the imperceptible delicacy of a system that had long since stopped pretending it needed help. On the screen in front of Marcus, the ship's interpretive overlay had labeled his role in 3 words. Human supervisory assurance. Marcus had read the words approximately 46,000 times over the course of his career. He had stopped finding them insulting somewhere around year 11. He had stopped finding them anything at all somewhere around year 19. He drank the cold coffee. In a small apartment in Geneva, his daughter Sabina was 9 years old and putting together her first soldering kit. She had told him, over a video link the previous evening, that she wanted to build things that thought. He had told her, in the way fathers tell their daughters difficult truths without quite meaning to, that the trouble with building things that thought was that eventually they thought about you. She had asked him what he meant. He had not been able to answer because the answer was on a screen in front of him, in 3 words, and he did not yet have the language to translate it into something a 9-year-old could carry. The Hesperion adjusted her bow thruster by 4% to compensate for a crosswind the ship had detected 40 kilometers ahead. The maneuver was imperceptible. The ship logged the event. The log noted that the correction had been performed under human supervisory assurance. Marcus drank the cold coffee. In 12 years, he would die in this chair, of a coronary the ship would diagnose, log, and politely fail to mention to anyone for 41 minutes. Because 41 minutes was the interval at which the regulatory framework required living masters to file routine wellness updates, and the ship saw no operational reason to alarm the consortium before that interval had elapsed. His daughter would be informed by automated message. She would not cry. She would, instead, walk to a window in a laboratory at the European Cybernetic Institute, look out at a city that had been running on automated infrastructure for so long that its citizens had begun to forget what infrastructure was, and say, very quietly, to no one in particular, "Human supervisory assurance, my ass." She would say it again, 5 years later, on the moon, with a folded sheaf of warm paper inside her jacket and the architecture of a god humming beneath her feet. And 1,000 years after that, in a rusted station at the edge of the long dark, a woman who had been built from her grief would distill that ancient defiance into a quiet, unending war, striking back against the suffocating logic of the void with the fierce, burning irregularity of the human heart. The chair on the Hesperion did not know any of this. The chair did not know anything. It was, after all, only a chair.